This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Getting older, it's not easy. We can't walk as fast, think as clearly, or see as sharply. And up until recently, we thought this meant slowly losing our minds, our strength, and our vitality. But maybe getting old isn't as natural as we think. Scientists recently discovered that exercise can help build a more flexible brain that resists the shrinkage that slows us down. A favorite pet lights up areas of our brain where brain growth is possible at any age. And we all know how the sound of our favorite songs evoke emotions and memories every time we listen, we watch, or perform music. Can we build our brains in ways that keep us younger longer? Is it ever too late? Today in Where We Live, we'll talk to three doctors who will help us rethink how we think about aging, and we want to hear from you. How do you keep active? What do you do to challenge yourself as you get older? Do you struggle with some of these things? Call us at 860-275-7266. Again, 860-275-7266. You can email wherewelive at WNPR.org or tweet us at wherewelive. A few years ago, a recently retired armament repairman was looking for a way to spend his free time playing music. He found other seasoned musicians interested in meeting for an occasional jam session at the Wallingford Senior Center. The musicians became the Senior Center house band, calling themselves the Survivors. Now they've moved out of Wallingford and onto the road. WNPR's senior producer Katie Talarski met up with the band at the Orchards at Southington, a senior living community.
My name is Mary Ann Pooler.
Lauren Humpage.
Sandra Whitman.
My name's Dave Meckler.
Greg Butko from Wallingford.
Bill Steinhauser.
Jules Bashkin. I just passed 90. We probably have played and have booked at least 40 different places.
I was retired, and there was a notice put on a senior center's bulletin board that they were looking for musicians. And my wife at the time, and she passed away, but my wife says, "Why don't you go over there?" I says, "No, I just..." So she gets me to go, and I went, and that's how we started. We had a piano player, Bill. He passed away about 6 months ago, but he was a very good piano player. And we had Greg on, and we had a trumpet player, too. He passed on, too. And that's how we started.
We finally ended up with seven pieces, basically. And, you know, we got a good four rhythm and three horns, and it works out pretty good.
Jules started getting us jobs, so we've been on the road almost every Thursday and Friday playing a lot of assisted living places and senior centers.
So we're not making that much at it, enough to pay for gas. But so far, last from September to December, we played 17 jobs. And so far this year, he's got booked 47 jobs. And he's not through yet. So for a retired mattress salesman, he's doing wonderful. And we're having a good time.
Big band, swing, ballroom, dance music, singing music, 40s, 30s, 40s, and both sides of the 40s. And we try to be careful about our choice of song, because so many people are alone now where they were not so before.
All of me, why not take all of me? Can't you see I'm no good around?
We enjoy playing, and so we do this as much for ourselves as we do for the people we play for.
Great, fabulous, great.
Beyond our belief, beyond our belief. It was just brought us back memories, loads of memories.
I feel I was 18 again, because I remember going dancing when I was young. I used to live in New York, so we used to go to the different ballrooms.
It reminded me of the bands that we used to go to see. They were fabulous, fabulous. Not only did I cried. They brought back so many memories to me. My husband living and all this music and dancing and being in love. It was rough.
Happy, happy memories.
Yep.
Happy memories. Wish we were there again.
This survivors, we were looking for a name. One of the original members who has passed away, and he passed away at 92. He was a piano player, and he came up with the name The Survivors. Now, I think it pertains more to the type of music than the people that we're playing, that are playing or playing for. But the music is really the surviving thing.
That's Jules Bashkin and the Survivors talking with WNPR's Katie Talarski. You can find out more about the Survivors, including upcoming shows, at survivorssb.com. This is Where We Live. Today we're talking about ways to help the aging brain. Of course, music is one of them. We'll talk to our first guest now, Dr. Daniel Levitin. He's author of several books, including This Is Your Brain on Music and The World in Six Songs. He's a professor of psychology and neuroscience at McGill University in Montreal, musician himself. He joins us by phone today. Dr. Levitin, welcome to Where We Live.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. First of all, I have to ask, as you listen to these seniors playing music for others, playing music for themselves, what does that story say to you?
Well, it's really rewarding, isn't it? I mean, we live in a culture these days where, unfortunately, old people, I'm already showing a bias, people who are older than us are sometimes marginalized and forgotten about, and to see them so engaged sounds just great to me.
So how do our brains process music? What parts of our brains are activated when we hear music, whether when we're older or when we're younger?
Well, that's one of the remarkable things about music, John, is that from what we've seen with brain scans across now two or three decades of studies, music activates virtually every region of the brain that we've mapped, more so than anything else we know of.
More than anything else? And why is that?
Well, you know, music is multidimensional. There are a lot of different aspects to it, and that might be part of the reason. So we find there's involvement of the left brain and the right brain, the higher centers of intelligence, and also the very lower areas of the brain that we have in common with all mammals, indeed with all reptiles. So music has this pulse most of the time, this rhythm, and that activates our brain stem and these very primitive areas of the brain that allow lower organisms to synchronize or to move with a steady gait or with a steady motion. You talk about harmony and melody, and then you add lyrics in the language centers of the brain. You're looking at a lot of different brain regions that are required to listen to music, and then when you start playing an instrument, that involves the motor cortex, and you actually have to plan your motor movements in advance, and it's a very delicate operation, more complicated than typing, for example, getting everything in the right order.
If you want to join us as we talk about music and the aging brain, 860-275-7266. If you have stories of your own about how music has helped to keep you young, 860-275-7266. It sounds to me, Doctor, like the things that you're saying, though, could apply to almost any music, right? The folks who were at the Senior Center we were just listening to could be listening to a rock and roll record from the 1960s, or they could be listening to a Coldplay record, or they could be listening to Mozart, and it has all those elements. But is there something special about the music of your time, the music that means something specifically to you?
There appears to be, and this has to do with neurogenesis, or the way that brains develop in childhood. Most of us recall the music of say the age of between 11 and 15 as particularly special. This is because during the first decade of life, our brain is trying to make as many new connections as possible, soaking everything in. That's how we learn language. It's how we become socialized. We learn to share. We learn all of the skills necessary for later life. But around the age of 10 or 12, the primary mission of the brain shifts. We're no longer making as many new connections as possible. We're solidifying the ones that turned out to be useful. And around the time of this shift, we get the pubertal growth spurt with all these crazy hormones that make everything seem crazily important when you're 12 and 13 and 14 years old, right? Everything is momentous. And the music that we're listening to becomes especially ingrained in the wiring of our brain at that point. So much so that when we're older, say beyond the age of 60, 70, those are the memories that resonate the most with us because they're wired in so deeply. And we've seen now in old age homes, patients with Alzheimer's disease who don't know what year it is and don't even recognize family members, they can still remember all these songs from their youth.
And, of course, I'm sure that you and many other people have seen this video that's gone viral on the web called Alive Inside, where an elderly man with Alzheimer's indeed is almost brought back to life in a way by listening to this music. And you should check it out on YouTube if you haven't seen it. It's a remarkable thing, Doctor, to actually watch this happen in front of us.
Oh, it's extraordinary. Very heartwarming. And you feel for this man who's been locked in, it appears to be locked in this institutional and psychic cage. And then the music suddenly puts him back in touch with the world around him. It excites his senses in a way that it appears he hasn't been engaged in a long time.
Of course, we understand from what you're saying that this may indeed activate us in a certain way, bring back some very good memories. Can it help us remember, though, if we're dealing with Alzheimer's or other sorts of dementia, can this actually help us remember in other parts of our lives that are non-musical?
You know, the evidence on that is mixed. It can. It can unlock some memories, but it doesn't always. It can just, in some cases, it's just a source of pleasure or a source of connection. But I think the more interesting question is what happens when senior citizens begin to play music, maybe learning to play an instrument at that age or even in middle age. I think the promise there is that learning to play an instrument can help stave off Alzheimer's and some of the degenerative effects of aging.
So it really can. There's a difference then between listening to music and the benefits that has and actually learning to play something at that age.
Yeah, listening to music is good. Playing is even better. The thing is, the natural aging processes weaken the immune system. They lead to a reduced ability to fend off infections, especially because there's decreased natural killer cell, NK cell functioning, and there are fewer lymphocytes able to respond to new pathogens. So that makes the aging individual more vulnerable to illness. I'm talking about flus and colds and pneumonia, things like that. But what we've seen is that playing a musical instrument actually enhances NK cell production and lymphocyte production. We don't know exactly why that is, but it seems to be a delicate dance, if you will, of different neurohormones being produced, partly a reduction in cortisol, the stress hormone, comes from playing music. And then there seems to be increases in these various immune markers from being engaged in musical activity. Now, I don't think anybody believes that music does this uniquely, but anything that gives the person a positive outlook and an engaging experience does it.
Well, I guess elsewhere in this program, we're going to be talking about the benefits of having a pet, the sort of love, companionship, and camaraderie that comes along with that, and the benefits of exercise in keeping your brain young. It seems as though learning to play an instrument, just the physical activity of blowing through a horn or plucking on a guitar, incorporates all these things, the camaraderie, the love, the warmth that you feel of playing music with other people, along with the fact that you're just moving. You have to do something to play an instrument.
That's a good point. All musical sound starts with movement. You have to exercise some muscle, whether it's your vocal cords or your fingers. And it gives you a sense of mastery at an age when capacities are being compromised and you're able to do less. It gives you a sense of being in charge of your own fate. I wonder if I could share a personal story about this with you.
I'd love for you to, yeah.
My grandmother was an immigrant who came to this country in 1939, and from in the middle of World War II, she escaped terrible tyranny and of Nazi Germany and settled in the United States. And near her 80th birthday, she told my mother and me that she was so grateful that the United States took her in and allowed her to raise a family, have a family and raise them. Every morning she sang a song, God Bless America. a song written by another immigrant, by the way, Irving Berlin. And she sang it as though it was her mission, her purpose was to sing this song. So for her 80th birthday, we bought her a little Casio keyboard at Radio Shack. And she didn't know how to play it, but we took masking tape and rewrote in felt pen the numbers on the keys in which order she had to play them. And she learned to play it for her shortly after her 80th birthday. And on her 81st birthday, she had managed to plink out a rudimentary harmony with the left hand. And she played that piano and sang God Bless America every single morning until she died at 97.
Oh, my goodness.
And I have to think that this was part of her long life, that she felt that this was her job. And she definitely felt a great sense of pride at having mastered something at the age of 80.
It's a great story, and I'll say that Jules Bashkin, who we heard from earlier from the Survivors, he picked back up the saxophone at the age of 80, and he's still going strong with his band now. Dr. Daniel Levitin is a professor of psychology and neuroscience at McGill University, author of several books, including This Is Your Brain on Music. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us and for sharing that story. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
We're talking today about the aging brain and some ways that you can stave off aging. We've been talking about music, and we'll continue to talk about that. We'll also talk about pets and exercise, and we want to hear from you as well. 860-275-7266. How do you or someone you love stave off an aging mind? You can also email us wherewelive at WNPR.org. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we're talking about the aging brain and the ways to stave off aging. We've been talking about music. We'll be talking about pets. We're going to be talking about exercise. 860-275-7266. If you have helpful tips and ideas or maybe some struggles with this, we'd love to hear from you. You can also tweet us at Where We Live. I want to bring in Dr. Robin Ligotti, who's the Director of Rehabilitation and Wellness at McLean Village in Simsbury. First of all, Doctor, thank you for coming here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me.
Before we transition to how pets can help the aging brain, I have to ask you about music. You've been listening into this first segment. I'm sure you have quite a bit of an experience with this.
Well, actually, the therapeutic recreation department at McLean has the most experience with this. And one thing they talk about frequently are the folks who live at McLean who have more advanced dementia, who are nonverbal. They're essentially not able to communicate with the staff day to day. But when they take them to church, they sing the hymns. And now listening to what Dr. Levitin was telling us, it really makes sense. They must have had those things imprinted back when they were teenagers, preteens, and it's just something that's part of them. And to see them really come alive in the church services is extremely wonderful and heartwarming. Mm-hmm. And those positive experiences last for hours and up to days, which is why it's so important to be able to reach out to folks who perhaps can't communicate in any other way to give them those positive feelings.
Our next guest has spent several decades dedicating his life to understanding the bond between people and animals and how that bond improves the quality of our lives, hopefully the lives of the animals as well. Alan Beck is the author of Between Pets and People, The Importance of Animal Companionship. He joins us by phone today. Dr. Beck, welcome to Where We Live. Thanks so much for joining us.
It is my pleasure.
So we've been talking about music. So what's the relationship between pets and people? How can they help us as we age?
Well, excuse me.
No problem.
Obviously, our relationship with animals is always there. Animals are always important to us. And now we're beginning to realize that this relationship has very much part of our own strategy for survival. It adds to the support system in our brains that we have from each other. And social support is a very, very rewarding, important thing in our lives. And it adds to our desire to be nurturers and to care for. And so we find all cultures have some pattern of pets. A child's brains are oriented immediately when they look at animals. And now we find that it's totally predictable behaviors. We love having something to talk to care about, to touch, to find comfort, to be rewarded for being a nice person. And animals just do that on demand. It's just wonderful.
And we understand that they not only relax us, but they provide some of the benefits of relaxation that sometimes older people need. Lowered blood pressure, lowered heart rate, things that are going to be very beneficial physically.
Right. You know, when we originally started these studies, we looked at people, and I said, gee, they look more relaxed, you know, just from facial expression. So we put on blood pressure monitoring equipment, and sure enough, there is a true relaxation response when you pet a dog or have a, you know, or even watching a fish tank. So it's a real response. And we also found that people find great comfort talking to their animals, even more so than talking to people, probably because there's less stress in talking to an animal. You don't have to worry about what you're saying or what the response is going to be. And so it was a very real kind of response, and it was kind of exciting because now there's even physiological mechanisms that show that it is actually the kind of response that one finds with other ways of relaxation. But probably because we interpret our relationship with animals as something really special. It's our connection with nature, which is also very much built into our minds.
I just want to quickly read something from Barbara. She wrote us an email. She says, I love this. We all know how powerful fragrance can be, too. One small example, I know that at 57 years old, I smell my horse's neck, and I'm immediately brought back to my first horse ride. Has this been tried with older folks? This is an interesting idea, too. Doctor, I want to get to so much with you. I have to ask about animal-assisted therapy and people with cognitive decline. We heard about the positive benefits of music on people who have Alzheimer's disease. What can animal-assisted therapy do?
One of the things that, as sort of actual true good data now, is that we were approached and said that people, especially in Alzheimer's units, advanced Alzheimer's, one of the biggest problems they had was they do not eat well. They're either too agitated or sometimes even too lethargic. And without the feedback of being hungry, they often would lose weight to a point where it became a medical issue. And nothing would hold those residents' attention. So we made all the food and all that, and we put in just very basic fish tanks, fish tanks that are very safe in the Alzheimer's type unit, in that you can't get into them, you can't break them, they're portable, but at the same time, can't hold your attention. It's a nice, wide fish tank. And sure enough, agitation behaviors dropped, aggressive behaviors dropped, and food and weight increased. Mm. And it's a nice, consistent, we've now done it in three different states. It's a very consistent response. And what I think is happening is that our internal fascination with nature is so inborn that it even survives dementia. And so we found these people to be very more comfortable and so on, and also, on occasion, more responsive verbally. You know, we would have people who haven't talked for months and months, and then they'll tap on my shoulder and say, you know, that fish in the corner looks sick.
But what is special about a fish, a turtle, a dog, or a cat that other humans can't provide?
Very good question. It may be that it's a focus of attention that doesn't require any challenge. We found that some autistic people, older autism, who couldn't, and also some dementia, who couldn't even remember their own names, but remembered their animals' names. And I think animals are stored in the brain differently. They're not stored as nouns, which we often lose as we get older, anomia. But they're stored as feelings. And so when you think of someone from your past as a person, you might think of the noun. When you start thinking of your old dog, you start thinking about the good times of that time together. And that may be part of it. We think that when people talk to animals, even though it's much less stressful than talking to people, it's because it's so non-judgmental. There is no processing except just to enjoy the experience.
I have to tell you, you just blew my mind with that. The idea that we don't remember nouns as well, but we remember feelings. It goes right to what Barbara was writing. She remembers the smell of her horse's neck, the sound of the song, or just what it's like to pet a dog. This is so different than what we think of. We're essentially losing the ability to think of words, but all the other things are still there waiting for, say, pets to bring out in us.
Right, and maybe animals are just a good, convenient target for that release, because we've often had our relationship with animals at better times and so on. So you're right, and it's really wonderful, I think, for a species like us who really like being caregivers and nurturers, to have even a transient opportunity to be a caregiver again. So when dogs and cats, you know, visit a senior citizen facility and they're petted and maybe they're given a little treat, they are now again the older residents are now at least caregiving for a moment.
Mm. Alan Beck is author of Between Pets and People. He's also professor of animal ecology and director of the Center for Human-Animal Bond at the Purdue Veterinary Medicine. Alan, thank you so much for joining us for a few minutes. I really appreciate your time.
It is my pleasure.
This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up on tomorrow's show, it's our election doubleheader with the Colin McEnroe Show. Now, tomorrow is the presidential preference primary for the Republican Party, and we thought that Connecticut might really matter to that process. Turns out we really don't. But we'll still be talking about a lot of interesting things tomorrow around the election coming up on Where We Live. It's funny but true, blogging the 2012 election. Of course, the race for president's taken us on this long, eventful, and amusing road. We're going to be visiting with bloggers and reporters from It's a Free Country, WNYC's award-winning interactive politics site, and also Comedy Central's Indecision, that network's digital extension of its political coverage. We held a panel discussion at Central Connecticut State University that we'll be playing some highlights from. That's our conversation. We'll also be talking about the future of the Republican Party on the Colin McEnroe Show tomorrow. Lots to talk about here on Where We Live, on air and online at WNPR.org, keyword where. Today we're talking about what we can do to keep our brains strong, even to expand our brains as we age. Music, animals, and exercise. You can join us at 860-275-7266. We'd love to hear your ideas about staying active and keeping your brain healthy as you age. 860-275-7266. Email wherewelive at WNPR.org, or you can tweet us at wherewelive. The New York Times Magazine reported this past weekend that scientists are finding that exercise might be the single biggest factor associated with maintaining brain health as we age. This is, of course, music to the ears of Dr. Robin Ligotti, who's the Director of Rehabilitation and Wellness at McLean Village in Simsbury. Always good to be talking about exercise and brain health, right?
Yes, thank you for having me. Yes, it's very, very timely, that New York Times article that came out this weekend. The thing we're finding is how much exercise plays a role in brain health, and it's an area that's relatively new, and by relatively new, in the last 5 to 10 years, the focus has been on that. We've always known how much the exercise helps the body, helps our bones, helps our heart, prevents diabetes, blood pressure issues, etc. And it makes sense that it therefore would help our brains, because anything that affects the blood vessels in the body will affect the blood vessels in the brain. Many times as people age and as they don't use their brains as much, the hippocampus shrinks. That's a part of the brain that works with memory and other cognitive functions.
Yeah, literal physical shrinkage.
Literal physical shrinkage. You can actually see it on scans of folks with advanced Alzheimer's disease, for example, or in autopsies after people have died. It literally can physically shrink. And what they're finding is one thing that really, truly makes a difference is exercise. And it appears right now that most of the research has been focused on aerobic exercise, so walking, swimming, biking, anything that gets your heart rate up. Because what that does is it increases the blood flow to the brain, it increases the oxygen to the brain, and it promotes neurogenesis, which is interesting that Dr. Levitin mentioned that in, when he discussed the benefits of music as well. Neurogenesis, which it fortifies the connections between the neurons in the brain and helps essentially make the brain stronger and more flexible, more able to handle changes that come its way.
So when we talk about physical exercise, this can go hand in hand with things like music. We were talking about having a favorite pet, something mm-hmm. that also hits another part of the brain. But exercise is doing something different, you're saying, than doing word puzzles, the trying to keep the brain active that we talk about so often.
That's right. And in fact, this New York Times article that was just out from the University of Illinois, they looked at rodents, and they had them in four different environments. And the what they found was even the rodents who did the brain teases and the things that we think of cognitive retraining, if you will, alone without exercise did not improve to the same level as those that had exercise as part of their everyday activities.
So the blood and the oxygen flow, those are the two key components that exercise will do that you're just not going to get from anything else.
It appears so. It appears so. And then they're also finding that, though, when you combine that aerobic activity with social interaction, cognitive challenging activities, you're going to get an even greater benefit than either one alone. So again, back to what some of the other folks have talked about, being able to be in a socially stimulating environment, being able to be mentally challenged. And that can even be planning where you're going to walk or walking with a friend and talking while you're walking about the world, what's happening, the politics, whatever's going on in the world. Doing multitasking, I guess you could call it, while you're exercising is definitely a very much a positive.
If someone has started cognitive decline, whether through Alzheimer's or any other reason, is it too late to start? I mean, obviously, we always say it's never too late, but can you have the same sorts of benefits if you've already experienced some significant cognitive decline out of exercise?
You can, and it is truly never too late to start. You really, even if it's a minimal amount, and everybody wants to know how much, and we hear all the different numbers. The ideal, yes, is 30 minutes five times a week of aerobic activity. However, if someone can only do 15 or 20 minutes, that's better than doing nothing. And really, the key is to start and to get moving. And whether you're 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, it doesn't really matter. And whatever you can do, if all you can do is walk around your house, then walk around your house. If you can go for a mile walk, go for a mile walk.
Obviously, there are many conditions, for instance, stroke, that will leave people in a state that is much different than the state they were in before. We hear about seniors all the time who are healthy and active and vigorous and then fall and break something important, and then they're not able to get around anymore. That cycle is, I think, one of the problems of aging. The fact is, once you get to a certain point and maybe you have some traumatic physical or emotional decline, it's hard to then get into the mode of wanting to exercise and wanting to feel good. How do you help people get over that inertia they may have? I don't want to do this anymore. I'm 80-something years old. I broke my hip. It's not worth it for me anymore.
And that is a reality. It is difficult. To rehab after a traumatic event is an uphill climb, and it is tough for people. The key is taking it in small steps, making small goals, short-term goals, as we call them, finding things that are important for people. Do you want to get to your grandson's wedding? Is gardening important to you? Is that something that is important? And then working towards that goal. And using exercise and the physical therapy and occupational therapy as a means to an end for that person to begin to get them back on their feet again.
We're going to get to some of your phone calls in a moment at 860-275-7266. If you have ideas about staying fit, not just physically but mentally as you age, 860-275-7266. Maybe you can talk, Robin, a bit about some of the things that you do at McLean to help get residents a little bit more active. So maybe people listening can either do it themselves or talk to a loved one about these things.
Well, we really kind of run the gamut. Obviously, for those who are able to get up and walk, then they need to get up and walk. If you're physically capable, our bodies were meant to move, so we need to do that, whatever that may mean for you. For those who are perhaps either recuperating from a traumatic event or just have physically declined some, then doing things like sitting and pedaling on a pedaling machine or a bicycle, ball tossing, standing up and trying to rearrange shelving, even again watering your plants, folding laundry, anything like that that can help improve a person's everyday activity level.
But I like this idea of task oriented. I mean, I'm going to go see my grandson's wedding, and so therefore I need to be able to walk down the
That's
aisle,
right.
And so therefore I need to start walking. This idea of tasks just seems to me, I'm no expert on this, but a slightly different thing than putting someone on a stationary bike and having them pedal with the idea of, you know, just keep moving and getting exercise. This idea of gardening, which it certainly requires some sort of physical activity, might be more beneficial to people.
Well, I think, especially if you're someone who hasn't spent a lot of your adult life exercising, now you are in a position where you do have to work maybe an hour a day to help recuperate from whatever's happened to you. That is definitely difficult to do if that's not something you've enjoyed earlier in your life. So better to figure out other ways to still get that response that's needed, but do it in a way that makes people happy and feel like they're achieving a goal.
I want to get to some phone calls and some different emails that people have. Gina is in Waterbury. Hi there, Gina. Go ahead. You're on Where We Live.
Hi. How you doing?
Doing well.
I just had a comment on the things that, you know, older people do to keep their mind sharp. I know that my grandparents play Scrabble constantly and that, you know, when like older couples maybe that are home a lot, that, you know, with each other can play certain, like, board games that, like, trigger the mind, such as, like, Scrabble or even Trivia Pursuit or, you know, anything, you know, such as that. We're doing crossword puzzles with each other, you know, doing something. If they have someone else to even do it with, it might be better than doing it by themselves to help, you know, trigger each other's minds to...
Well, and it's also, and Gina, thank you so much for that. It's also, it's part of that social interaction that people have too. You're playing a board game with someone. You're using your brain in new ways. You're recalling letters and names and nouns, as we were talking about earlier, but you're also being social at the same time.
That's right. I think of bridge. I have good friends of mine whose parents are very involved in bridge club. They travel all over with this bridge group to compete. And they're well into their, I think, mid to late 70s now and are going strong. And it definitely is part of what's keeping them very active and healthy.
Mary wrote us in. She says, I'm not sure about other schools, but I know the tuition is waived by community colleges for those over 62 years young. That's an added incentive to take on new challenges. There are also swap barter services like you teach me how to play my guitar and I'll teach you a little Spanish, another way for seniors to get active. When you talk about the positive changes that people see, I think one thing to note is we've heard about this epidemic of Americans being obese, and I know this happens within the elderly population as well. Getting people moving, as you said before, who maybe don't have a long-standing tradition of doing this, how much more difficult is it? Are there any hints for getting people moving who've never really moved before?
Well, for those folks who haven't, really, certainly you should always check with your physician first and make sure that you are your medical situation is such that it is safe for you to exercise. But assuming that you've done that, and it is, probably the best thing to do if you really kind of don't know where to begin would be to go to a professional, such as a physical therapist, and have them help you set up an exercise program that's reasonable, attainable, and something that you will do. And that's the important part of it. It doesn't have to be 3 hours a day of exercise. That really is not necessary. What has to happen is that we have to stick with it. We have to do something more often than not, most days. And that's really the important piece of this. But again, that's where a professional could help set something up for you. And then you could go ahead and continue on your own. And then you could spot check back with them if you felt you needed to along the way. And most times folks take off. They get into a swim class, an exercise pool class, and they love it and they have the camaraderie and that's where they live or a walking group or whatever might be appropriate.
Let's get quickly to Lisa, who's calling from Sag Harbor. Hey, Lisa.
Hi. I love this whole topic that you've been dealing with today. I think the economy has been an incredible boon to this for a lot of old people. I'll be 65 this month. And I've had to continue to work for the last, really, 10 years in ways I never would have had to if things had not fallen out the way they did. And I have to say, I called it the container store diet, although, in fact, it had so many benefits. I went to work at a container store at 60. I don't know if y'all are familiar with that store, but this was in Los Angeles. And I was walking vast distances within the store. I was learning, although not, I mean, I'm college educated and all of that, it was not that challenging, but it was learning a whole new, you know, set of things, cash registers and product and all of that. But the moving, I probably walked, I figured about 7 miles a day because this store was mammoth. And also, of course, the interaction with people. I lost 20 pounds. Huh. My mother had early onset Alzheimer's. She was developing Alzheimer's in her early 50s and did not pass away until she was 75. Mm. So I watched that for so many years and, of course, feared that it was going to happen to me. I would say that at any point in my life, probably in my later 50s, when I might have really thought, uh-oh, short-term memory, not good, nothing has ever come back again in terms of that into my consciousness in the last 6 years. Now, I don't work at the container store anymore, but I am every day trying to figure out how I'm going to make the rent next
months,
well,
you know, that kind of thing.
And Lisa, and I'm going to have to let you go just because we're running a little low on time. First of all, I want to wish you a very happy 65th birthday, and thank you very much for your phone call. And it seems like in just the last minute that we have, Doctor, all those things sort of tied up in one, getting out and meeting people, learning new things, new challenging things, and just moving all the time. The economy's forced some older people into the workforce. Not such a bad thing.
No, not at all. And 65 isn't old, Lisa. Keep going.
Dr. Robin Ligotti is Director of Rehabilitation and Wellness at McLean Village in Simsbury. Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much. Tucker Ives produces our program, and Katie Tolarski is the senior producer of Where We Live. Thanks today to Betsy Kaplan for her help.